Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. As the Big Red Bus takes out on the roads of Illinois, everything is a complete disaster. We only have two tires left. Paint job ruined. There's people have been shooting us with paintballs as we drive by. So things are pretty dark right now. And with the big news of the day, the departure of Fred Hoiberg. But my steady co-pilot, the great one, Doug Tonis, is on the line. How you doing, brother?
Outstanding.
Oh, have you gotten over the firing of the great coach Fred Hoiberg? Is it finally settled in that he's gone forever?
Have I gotten over it? I mean, I don't know if I required getting over it. I was pretty much okay with the move. I think, like a lot of Bulls fans, I expected Fred to make it to the end of the year. I think that would have been fine. I don't think there's any urgent desire or need for me to get rid of him now. But I'm also not upset by the move. I don't, you know, it's nothing about this that makes me feel, you know, poorly that he's gone either.
I think your sentiments differ quite a bit from most of the fan base. It seems like I never knew Fred Hoiberg had so many fans. I mean, you turn on the radio, he's been unfairly handed a horrible team for his entire tenure here, and he's been a great coach, and we never gave him what he needed to succeed. Let's start with that. What is the perfect player for Fred Hoiberg's system? Because I'm a little bewildered that after 4 years or 3.5 years, he's never had that perfect player. Well, what is the perfect player? Is it LeBron James? Is it Kevin Durant? What do you feel the perfect player for Fred's system is?
I mean, in a way, I don't know, and I don't care. He was talked up as a guy who would have a somewhat Mike D'Antoni, I think, style offense, the way I remember it, a guy who was going to shoot a lot of threes, probably not the same level of isolation, a lot more passing, but, you know, offense that was going to run, shoot a lot of threes, Golden State style. Bulls never really had great three-point shooting players to fit that role. I mean, I agree the talent overall that he had wasn't special, but he didn't disappoint. And I should say, under the Hoiberg era, and the reason I don't care one way or the other, the first two seasons he was here, you know, there was a drop-off that first season from when Thibodeau was here with more or less the same roster. And you could argue maybe he should have won some more games that year. I thought it seemed to me pretty clearly that the arrow was pointed down on that team, though, you know, momentum-wise and everything else. So that doesn't surprise me. The second year, when they brought in Wade and Rondo, they did about what I think you would expect. They're about an average team. It wasn't a team of good fitting pieces, no matter who the head coach was, and they did about what you think. And then last year, they were purposefully trying to lose, and they won, was it 27, 28 games? I forget right about that number, though. And so I think that's about what you expect from Fred. This year, while throwing out three guys on G League contracts for regular minutes, and another couple guys that are barely hanging on in the NBA while half the rosters are. To be the third worst team in the league is about what you would expect. I don't think Fred Hoiberg was subtracting wins. I don't know that he was adding wins either. I'm fine that he's gone. I think I saw enough from him in terms of the lack of discipline and the lack of consistent energy from the team that I don't think he was the coach for the future. I think you've been hearing Lowry's quotes about it. I don't know if you heard any today from Casey Johnson's article, but hearing some of those quotes that he had of, you know, not really knowing if Fred still had control of the team and like hedging his bets. It's not like he came out universally and said like, oh, Fred was great. It's hard to say what a guy is going to say in those situations. Probably played it safe. Maybe that means nothing. But I don't think there's anything bad here with them letting him go, nor do I think it would have been terrible if they kept him. I think we know enough to know he wasn't the guy of the future. So it was really a matter of time. It's the end of this year, you know, at the latest, in my opinion.
Yeah, Pack said, I mean, if they've already determined he's not the guy for the future, well, bringing these guys back could kind of mask it because the team's going to play better. There's no doubt about that with the additional talent infusion. So it could have masked the issues that are out there. And I'll also counter with anyone. I've heard the story ad nauseum that he never had any talent. And again, his first year, here's what he had. He had Jimmy Butler at 26 years old, Paul Gasol, Derrick Rose, Taj Gibson, Nico Mirotic, Doug McDermott, Mike Dunleavy, Jakeem Noah, Etuan Moore, Tony Snell, Justin Holiday, Bobby Portis, and the great Kirk Heinrich and Aaron Brooks. Now, a lot of those guys, like Etuan Moore and Nico Mirotic and Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson and Derrick Rose and Paul Gasol and Jimmy Butler are still contributing in rotation players on other teams in the NBA. So if everyone wants to say that he never had any talent, pound sand, because it's either criticism for letting Etuan Moore go or guess what? He never had anything. Well, what is it? What is it? Is it that? Is it A or B? Because either Etwan Moore sucks because he was 26 years old in his prime, and Tony Snell sucks because he was 24 years old in his prime when he was in Chicago, and they did nothing. Absolutely nothing. And every year I have to put up with, now again, we have LaVine and we have Parker. They're both shooting career lows in three-point percentage. Is it because they suck? Is it because they're terrible? Or no, is maybe their coach not putting them in position to succeed? I'm so sick of it. It's either one or the other, but it's not both. So well, I'm sorry to go off a little bit.
I think all I could say about that, though, is just to be fair, yeah, you had a bunch of guys who are rotation players. That doesn't mean, it's not like he won 10 games with that team.
They won 42.
They won like 42 and 40. If my memory serves me correctly.
Yep.
I mean, so, yeah, I don't think that was like a great list of talent outside of Jimmy Butler. You know, when you look at where those guys were in their career, so I get the sentiment, but it's not like you can gauge a team based on the talent they have. And if you asked me at the beginning of the year how many wins would this team project out to, I think the Bulls pretty much hit that number each year, more or less. So Fred was not like overachieving, whether he had talent or not. It certainly wasn't overachieving. You know, Thibodeau actually brought some teams out that did better than you would have thought they would have done. Mm-hmm. You know, you could easily regardless of what we think of him as a coach, you could easily look at it and say there are times where he got his teams more wins than you think he would. Now, he may have done so with this ultra-short-term approach that you don't want on your team.
Yes.
Wore himself out and all this other stuff. That's a separate thing. But you could see, like, there were some positive results. There's nothing like that with Fred. There's nothing like, oh, wow, with this group of guys, he led them to 40 wins, but this was like a 30-win roster. Like, there's nothing like that that happened with him ever. So, you know, it's fine. I can't get too riled up one way or the other. I also don't think he, like, undershot. I don't think, like, if you brought in whatever amazing coach you want to think of, if Greg Popovich was coaching this team, that they would have, like, 15 wins right now. You know, I mean, it just, he's kind of hit what I think around the expectation was based on the talent he's had while he's been here. And I think what really did him in is he was a soft-spoken guy. I don't think he had control of the locker room. I don't think people listened to him. I don't think he had the respect. I don't think he was enough of a hard ass to get people motivated and working and disciplined.
No doubt.
And I think that's ultimately what was the final straw here, was not the production on the court, but the lack of control over the situation.
And also, I think, I mean, there's too many times I see the Bulls from this offensive guru and their offense that they're currently in, shooting a shot with no one within like 15 feet of the basket. That happens continually, and it's reflected in our awful offensive rebounding numbers, our rebounding numbers in general. We're just dumb shots. And I understand, you know, the space and pace. I understand you want to shoot up early in the shot clock. Doug, do you see that? I see that too. That's contrary to any winning basketball, is taking a shot or even a mid-range jumper when there's no one within 15 feet of the basket. There's no opportunity for an offensive rebound. You're just giving away possessions. That happens far too much in this guy's offense. And I don't see anything that's revolutionary or anything great. And I would also counter, too, like, how about thinking out of the box with some of these players? He walks into a team with Paul Gasol. Paul Gasol's on a team. He shoots 34.8% from three. The very next year, he departs for San Antonio with a staff that is forward-thinking. And guess what? He leads the league in three-point shooting. Leads the league in qualified attempts. So I'm just so sick of hearing it. Like, it's excuse after excuse. We've been in the bottom half every year with this guy at the helm, and he's allegedly an offensive guru. And you hit on the most important point. He's not a leader of men. He's not inspiring greatness. He doesn't – I know you disagree with me on this, but when you have a young team and you have Wendell Carter Jr. picking up rookie call after rookie call, getting two fouls and going to the bench within the first 5 minutes, and your coach is staring off into the distance like he's listening to Pink Floyd and he just ate a brownie filled with goodies, that indicates your coach doesn't care. That indicates your coach is not passionate about – backing you up and saying, hey, ref, how about giving us a fair shake? That is drives players crazy, and they lose respect for a coach like that. Now, I went to one game that Boylan was at last year. He coached one game as a head coach in April against the Washington Wizards, and a tanking Bulls team with nobody playing beat them like a drum. A Wizards team that was battling for a playoff spot. And the first thing I noticed, and I said it to my kids, was look at how Boylan works the sidelines as compared to Fred. You notice things like that. You notice him yelling at the officials. You notice it, you notice a guy, there's a major difference between a guy like Tibbs on the sideline. I never had a problem with Tibbs' sideline demeanor. And a guy like Fred, who often sits there. And that's not to say you can't be great, a great coach, a little bit more cerebral like a Brad Stevens or like a Phil Jackson who did a lot of sitting. But when the time came to work the officials, they did that. I don't think he did that nearly enough with this team.
I'm just laughing at the idea, and not just to throw out so much personal information about you, but the age of your kids. You sitting there trying to say, look at the coach, work in the officials. Like, that's what you're talking to him at a Bulls game about. I can totally see that, but it's
so
very hysterical. Yeah, it's fine. I don't know how anyone could get so fired up about Hoiberg one way or the other. I agree it's fine that he goes. I don't think he was going to be the guy that leads us anywhere. There's no way, in my opinion, he was going to get a new contract unless his team came in and was awesome this year, which clearly was not the case.
Well, I get fired up about it.
It's only a matter of time. It's fine that he's gone. I'm not celebrating because I viewed it as inevitable. I don't think he was the worst. I think Vinny Del Negro was the worst. It wasn't that level bad, but yeah, it's good that we move in another direction. I am a little concerned, and maybe other Bulls fans are with me, that I think Jim Boylan might actually get us too many wins. Yeah. I'm firmly on the tank bandwagon at this point, and that's maybe my one argument for keeping Fred, is just let this thing fall apart this year. You know, don't try and right the ship with this guy who might get you a bounce by working guys harder. Work us up to 32 wins. That's not really that useful for the Bulls this year.
Do you like the choice? I mean, the choice of promoting him and not just giving him the interim tag, but saying, hey, you're going to be our head coach going forward.
Well, I mean, for the rest of the year, it's not like they gave him a new contract that extends anything.
Well, he's under contract till 2020, technically, as an assistant. But, I mean, I guess.
I don't think there's any view at this point, in my opinion, that says if the Bulls want to, that they can't just bring in someone else at the end of the year. You know, Jim Boylan's contract is not going to be something they can't get out of if they choose that they want to do that. So I think it's fine-ish. I mean, I don't think you're far enough along and we're going with this roster right now that you want to go out and hire another big-name coach this summer necessarily. And I think there's a good chance Boylan might be, you know, a quality coach in the NBA. It's very hard to judge assistants. You know, I know fans always have this thought of like, oh, this person or this person. You have no idea what these guys are doing as a coach, right? Like, you literally have no idea. Even with Hoiberg, like, we can only see like 2% of what he's doing. You don't know what he's doing in practice. You don't know how he's riding guys. You don't know how he's drilling. All you can see is the results. And so as an assistant, it's even harder to gauge these guys. So I have somewhat of a positive feeling about Boylan based on the reputation. But we'll see how it goes. You know, internally, they'll have some type of view of how that works and have some view of confidence that they have in him based on what they've seen. So I think it's okay. You know, we'll see how he does over the rest of the season. And what type of attitude this team comes back with, I think, will be pretty apparent. And what the players think about this move.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure Boylan won't trot out with the Bulls up by one against the team in the last 30 seconds, trot out Parker and Portis as your 4 and 5. I think he'll be smart enough to, if Lauri Markkanen, he's already announced that he's starting on Tuesday. Another incredibly, to me, just insanely dumb. How long we've been waiting for these three guys to play together, Levine, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., and let's delay it for another quarter. So, yeah, so we can get time with Shaq Harrison and campaign. It's beyond idiocy. And it's not just that. I think there were other wrong decisions that I've talked about ad nauseum. And it is a disaster to me, this coaching hire in retrospect. It just did not work out. And there has to be consequences for that at some point. And I would suggest that if Boylan doesn't work out, if Boylan, and I believe he will, this is where I differ with most people. I think he will be a success. I like everything I've heard about him. I love his focus on defense. I love where he comes from working with the Spurs. I love where he comes from with the Rockets, his time there. I think he will be his focus on defense. You heard his own player, Wendell Carter Jr., call him a defensive mastermind. I've yet to see any quote from any player talking about Hoiberg as a counter offensive mastermind, end quote. I haven't seen that. I could have missed it. Somebody please send it to me. So I'm confident Boylan will work out. But if he doesn't, and this is a mess, And this is a big mistake. And we don't get better. Like, I want to see a winning team next year. I think there's enough talent that should be a winning team next year. I'm on board for letting this whole group go at the end of next year. If we look in retrospect and it's 2020 and these guys still suck and we're still putting up in 5-19 records like this, I'm adios. Let's try something else. Am I nuts now? Or are you? Do you feel like my bus is getting a little wayward? No, I'm starting to cross over into the other lane.
I'll put it this way. Like, so you know I'm a front office supporter. As a general
so am
rule,
I.
Right?
So am I.
Yeah, so as a general rule. But I'll say this. They've been here long enough that if at any point ownership said, we've seen enough, we want to try something new, regardless of what's going on, completely defensible.
Yes.
Completely defensible for the front office right now to say, you know what, I'm going to go a different direction in the front office too. Completely defensible. If they do that next year, I actually have a pretty good amount of confidence based on the way these guys draft. I like almost all of the trades they do. I think they're very good at extracting value. I think they negotiate pretty good contracts most of the time. You know, the things that people blame them for not doing or for doing poorly are things that, like, really in context, if you really understand the basketball context of those things, are things that are, like, unreasonable expectations.
Can you give an example?
Like, well, they didn't trade for a superstar.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Neither did like 29 other teams.
Right.
You know, or like
or they didn't sign.
Like, they didn't bring in a huge name free agent. It's like four teams in the league that have done that over the last like 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like stuff like that. You know, I think they in general do a very good job. I think it's highly likely if you replace them, you'll get someone worse. But at the same time, they've been here long enough. They've not fully gotten the job done. If someone said it's time to move on, I could never look at them with a straight face and say, no, you can't move on from these guys. They're so special. You know, you can't hope to improve from here. Like, they've had a long time to try to make this thing work. They've had a lot of head coaches. They've had a lot of draft picks. They've had a good amount of success at varying points, too. But the overall success of the franchise, it's been so-so, you know, over this time. So I think I'd be totally fine if Reinsdorf moved on. I think they do a pretty good job. I'm confident that they can, you know, rebuild this team well. I think they draft well. I think at this point in time, that's a very key function that they have to do.
Absolutely.
So I'm hopeful that they'll continue to do well. I'm still generally positive about the Bulls' outcomes for next year. But we need a lot of talent. I think what you've seen with the injury situation right now is that the Bulls just need a lot of talent. They need even just like average players. Like, their depth is just not what it could be. It's really hard because we don't know how it would have been had Valentine been healthy. You know, we had a lot of guys who maybe we expected to improve and play better this year, like Dunn and Valentine. If those guys were healthy and stepped up, things maybe could have been a whole lot different. But we'll never know how that is. You know, we'll just never know how things would have gone. And, you know, when Dunn and Portis come back and Lowry kind of gets into playing shape, we'll see what that team looks like. But off the cuff right now, I'm thinking it's not going to be enough. I think this team still needs some pretty significant talent infusion.
Well, I'll agree with a lot of what you said. Listen, I'm not buying what a lot of people are peddling over the last 24 hours that, you know, in general, I think that the attitude, you know, these guys, they're just totally incompetent. They should be out of here. I understand your feeling. I understand the anger and the frustration you've had over the Bulls not achieving what they should have in the past decade. I totally understand that. To make the argument that these guys don't know what they're doing, I don't buy that. I think Lauri Markkanen at 7 and Wendell Carter Jr. at 7, I'm more comfortable with what the Bulls are doing than what the Orlando Magic are doing. I had some guy today say, I pointed out that the Bulls' last four top 10 picks, where most of the All-Stars are found, are in the top 10 picks. Last four are Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Jakeem Noah, and Derrick Rose. Two of those players made first all-team, all-NBA. There's only three teams in the NBA over the last 11 years that have drafted three All-NBA players. That's Oklahoma City, that's Golden State, and that's the Chicago Bulls. If you go a little bit further back, you'll get San Antonio Spurs included in there. We're the only team out of all those that had two of those players devolve into minimum contract players. That's it. You know, Noah and Rose devolved into that. Now, Rose is having a resurgence. That's great. I'm super happy for him. But those two guys were, by the end of their contract, the end of the last 2 years on their contract, nowhere near first-team All-NBA. So to say that these guys can't draft and that they're incompetent is an inaccurate statement. And to act like, some guy emailed me today, texted me today, I don't recall who, They're top 10 picks. Of course they should be good. Really? Of course they should be good. Have you seen what the Suns have drafted in the top 10 for the last 10 years? The Knicks, the Orlando Magic? Most top 10 picks aren't good. Most top 10 picks aren't home runs in all NBA. The Bulls have hit on almost every one that this organization has had. So I'm not saying I don't think they're incompetent. And I think in 2 years, if we're still bad and I'm advocating that they should be fired, that doesn't mean I think these guys are the wrong guys for the job. What it means is it's enough. It's enough. It's been here a long time. It's just not working out for whatever reason. But the blind anger and the blind frustration, like this situation is so bad that this is 2000 again. And I'm watching Marcus Fizer, you know, miss layups in pregame. It's not true. It's not true. You seem to be a little bit more dire on the outlook, but I don't think we can say that yet until we see Dunn. I mean, if by the end of this year, Doug, we could absolutely say, you know what? We got four core pieces. And those four core pieces are Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., Chris Dunn, and Zach LaVine. And then possibly you'd like to see some growth from, you know, a guy like Hutch. And we don't know what we have, unfortunately, yet with Valentine. But I think if you're talking about four core pieces with three of them having all-star potential, that's pretty good.
Sure, that's good. Anyone who thinks the Bulls aren't good at drafting is just wrong. The Bulls are outstanding at drafting. You can show that objectively. There was some article I read somewhere. It basically showed the Bulls had the lowest draft bust rate of any team in the NBA and the highest draft hit rate of any team.
I'd love to see that article.
And I'd have to find it. It was maybe like a year or 2 years old, but Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. aren't going to impact that. Like, people are even upset about guys like Valentine and Portis and saying they drafted terribly, or Tony Snell. Like, even these guys were like appropriate value for where they were picked.
Absolutely.
Like, it's like these were the guys who were bust. It's just that you're used to getting a Jimmy Butler and a Taj Gibson late in the draft. And now when you draft a guy like Bobby Portis, who's still probably above average for his draft slot, you're like, well, this front office is terrible. Well, no, that's not really the case. Like, this is actually still better than what everyone else is doing. Like, the Bulls, when people complained about their drafting and the period where they got McDermott, Portis, Snell, Teague, or like, you know, they kind of had like a 5-year period where it wasn't good at all, or generally, those guys actually mapped pretty much to the typical draft outcomes of a typical franchise. And we were like beside ourselves with horror because everything else has really been so much better. So they're very good at drafting. It's the other things that people, I think, have more of a right to complain about. But as I said, I'm up for the. I agree with the people who say, look, it's been like that. You nailed it. It's just been enough. But whether they're good or not, at some point, you could just say it's been enough. I get why people would say that. I'm sort of the belief that if you think someone is good, even if things haven't worked out yet, but you see the reasons for it not working out are beyond their control. This is a superstar-driven league. 90% of being a superstar is beyond your control. And so if you don't get that because it's beyond your control, or you're set up to win a title, but then Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose just break down and become terrible players, that's kind of beyond your control. So like when I look at how things are, I'm like, I'd be okay if they stay. I understand the logic either way. So I'm kind of fine with no matter what happens, but we'll see how it goes. I think that's kind of, we gotta at least talk a little bit about Lowry coming back, right?
Yeah, I do want to state one more thing.
These guys all time.
Yeah, I do want to state one more thing. I just want to point out two of the guys that we always get compared to. The front office always gets compared to Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge has never, not once, drafted a player to make all NBA, period. All those draft picks, all those assets he took. Now, Tatum may. He's taken quite a big step back this year. Hopefully someday he will make all NBA. Never made all NBA. I'm not talking about all-star, all NBA. Everybody can make the All-Star team. Luol Deng made the All-Star team. Everybody can draft guys to make an All-Star team. Not a lot of guys can draft All-NBA. He's never drafted All-NBA. Another great guy, Sam Hinkie. Everybody loves Sam Hinkie. What a hero. What a hero. He's drafted two top 10 busts, one guy who's made All-NBA. That's it.
I don't know anyone who seems that fond of Hinkie.
There's a ton of nerds that love Hinkie.
I don't know. I don't see people. I think Daryl Morey is the other guy I hear, you know, a lot about. In terms of people being jealous, I think people are jealous of the process, but not that Hinkie was great. Just that they're like, well, I wish we had gone through this process, you know, and kind of went through things like of losing and trading away your okay players and making sure you really get star players before you try to do something. We'll see where that works out for Philadelphia. everyone has anointed them, but let's just see where ultimately, you know, they land.
Amen. Agreed. Let's talk about Larry coming back. Let's start out with number one. How appalled were you with the decision not to start him? And number two, what did you think of his first performance? Obviously rusty, his first game back.
Not at all. I would have been fine if they started him, but I don't think it's uncommon for a guy who's been out for, you know, this length of time to come off the bench for a game. You know, and just try to get a little bit of run, play with the minutes limit. I don't think that's a terrible thing. Would have been fine if they started him too. I'm not saying he had to do that, but I don't think it would be like super unusual for that to happen for a lot of players. So I was okay with that. I'm glad that we're starting him now. I certainly wouldn't want to leave him in that role for more than, you know, a game, maybe two games, but I was okay with it for a game. In terms of his performance, what was most appalling to me about it was how he just struggled to even like get the ball in his hands. Like even when they were looking for him, it was like they couldn't pass to him. And it made me feel really discouraged about maybe what type of upside he has. Like there just seemed to be like not enough, you know, ability for him to get athletic separation and be able just to create openings for himself, even just to get the ball. I mean, like, forget about shooting and making shots. Even just trying to get the ball seemed like a struggle for him. And I thought that was really disconcerting to me. That'll all go away as he makes more shots and tougher shots and just probably gets back in the flow and gets used to playing with people. And I think it speaks to the overall talent of the team, too, and why that's a struggle right now. But I was pretty discouraged, and I have to step back and say it was one game. It's going to be better. Let's give this guy some time. Just like when Chris Dunn came back and played one game, it was pretty poor and then got hurt. But, you know, let's give Chris Dunn some time when he eventually comes back. It's great that at least we finally get to see him. There's something worth watching on the court now when the Bulls play again. And so I'm excited to see what happens, but it was not a great showing.
So let me give a little background. I coach a fourth grade travel basketball team. And one thing I stress...
Pretty much the same thing.
Pretty much, no, but there are basketball...
Just so everyone knows.
There are basketball truths from fourth grade that go all the way up to the pros. And one of the things that you'll see as a fourth grader with a fourth grade team is occasionally someone will pass the ball inbounds with their feet over the line. It's a violation. It goes back to the other team. I always think that's a reflection of poor coaching. So for the first four practices, I said that 10 times. When you pass the ball inbounds, do not cross the line. I said it 10 times right in a row. I had the whole team repeat it. Then I finish with, if anyone violates this rule at any time all year, the entire team is going to run 10 laps in the next practice. And lo and behold, nobody crossed over the line. And I brought it up in every practice. These fundamentals need to be continually discussed. Unfortunately, in our last game, a kid crossed the line. So I don't know what I'm going to do now. But anyhow, my point is, it needs to be hit home to get the ball to Larry in the post. That needs to be discussed at every practice. When there's a mismatch, it should be automatic that ball goes down him in the post. And I am pulling out my hair for the last year and a half watching them continually miss this. Thank God they got rid of Jerian Grant, who was the most incompetent I've ever seen at throwing a post pass for a point guard. But we saw it last game, and it needs to stop. It's got to stop with Zach. The guy who committed the error last game I saw notice was Shaq Harrison. I don't know why he was out there with Shaq Harrison, but regardless, he was out there with Shaq, and he passed it up for Hutchinson off of a pick. It's got to stop, and somebody needs to do it. And I have a feeling that miracle of miracles, it will stop. I think you're going to see him get the ball more to Larry. That's coaching, 100%. So
I think there's a little bit of – I mean, I agree with you to start with. I'm not disagreeing. But I think it's more difficult to feed him in the post than you think it is because he doesn't have as much length or athleticism as you would like. And when you try to feed him a lot of these passes, they get deflected if you throw him like the slow lob. And, you know, sometimes people spin around him and deflect that bounce pass when it's coming in. And I think the Bulls need to work on that as a skill set. But I think Lowry himself is not someone who is easy to feed in the post based on some of his physical characteristics, depending who is on him.
Doug,
part of the problem.
Doug, I see what you're saying, and that was absolutely a problem with Luol Deng for many years under Skiles, for many years under Vidi Del Negro. There was a concerted effort to get the ball to Deng in the post. Well, Deng is about as wide as a 2x4, and teams would just reach around him, and in every attempt to get him the ball in the post, I'd say about 70% of them would usually end in a disaster. I don't think they're even attempting to get the ball in the post. To me, that's on Lowry, all right? If they're throwing the ball to him in the post and there's turnovers, that will be on Lowry. They're not even attempting it. You know, he's 20 pounds heavier, allegedly, and he looks bigger to me than he did last year. And I understand what you're saying. Let's see. Let's see if that's not really true on Lowry. They got to throw
it. We'll see. Watching this game, there's points, and it's one game. It's his first game back, so I don't want to overreact anything. But there are just points where you saw them looking for him, and you saw them basically feeling like, I can't throw the ball in. Like, you saw him, like, fighting for position and kind of, like, handing his arm out, but there was, like, a guy on him, and they looked at him, and you could tell they wanted to throw it in there, and they just didn't feel like they could do it without making a turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether that means you just need to make some quicker actions, whether your guy trying to feed the post can't just be standing there with the ball over his head, like, waiting for Lowry to get open, but you have to have more movement so that it's a more dynamic feed. You know, you can improve some of these things with coaching, be less stagnant in the way you're trying to make this work, or just get him the ball out on the perimeter. Let him, you know, work from there. Your guy can shoot too. So I think there's a lot you can do no matter how you put that out there. I think the one thing we'd agree with is we need to get Lowry the ball more. You know, whether it's in the post, whether it's on the three-point line, whether it's through movement, whether it's through improving our feeding, we need to find a way to get him the ball more, get him comfortable, and put him in positions to succeed. Fred Hoiberg did not look like the guy who was going to figure out how to do that, and hopefully Jim Boylan is.
I agree. One final comment. I do disagree with your initial assessment. Hey, you know, I've seen a lot of teams do that. That's absolutely true. A lot of teams will ease a guy back in. Golden State did that. We're not Golden State. We're 5-18. There's no use of waiting. It's ridiculous to say, well, let's ease him in. Ease him in with what? Like Shaq Harrison and campaign? You're setting him up for failure. You're setting him up not to shoot well. That's why every player who's ever played basketball wants to start, because they don't like coming off the bench because it's a more difficult job. You're cold. You warmed up for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and suddenly you're sitting on the bench for 20 minutes in real time. And they set him up for failure. And I think that was the impetus for him being let go. I really do. I'm like, you know, what are we waiting for? This is insanity. You know, I mean, and I heard a guy say, well, it's easier to stretch out the minutes. Why is it easier to stretch out the minutes? He finished that game with complete bums around him in the fourth quarter against Houston. It's like, I'm glad they've already done it. So no use berating the point, but there's nothing more important than Markkanen, Levine, and Wendell Carter Jr. developing that chemistry. We need to see it, and it's got to happen now. It's going to start tonight and Tuesday in Indiana. Let's finish up with this. What things did you see in this Bulls team that you would like to see change going forward, immediate things that you hope Coach can institute, Coach Boylan will institute? And do you think that will happen?
It's kind of an interesting thing because immediately I'm now in the thought of, I just want this team to lose as many games as possible and take, you know, Zion Williamson. And so fixing any of these things will probably move counter towards that goal. So the better Boylan is, the less likely we are to draft a star in the draft, which is, you know, the unfortunate position that you always are when you're not a good team yet, you know, where you sort of want to see some progress, but at the same time, the progress hurts you. But let's ignore that part of it. If I just want to say, here's what I need to see to make me feel Jim Boylan is the coach of the future, regardless of whether it damns our draft pick or not. The most important thing is I'd want to see what I feel is a good scheme on both the offense and defensive side and discipline on both, you know, both places. You know, you would see times where the Bulls on offense would move the ball like pretty well. They got people like running around. They're clearly doing plays, but you see a whole ton of times they're just standing around and they don't seem to know what they're doing. And then Zach LaVine just chucks up a shot. You know, like, I'd like to see those plays minimized. Now, it's okay that there are a few. I know people will always cringe when he just does that. But there's times where you want to conserve some energy in offense, or there's times where you can't just be sprinting constantly. It's just the way it is. We're not doing hockey rotations where guys can just go 100%, you know, for 4 minutes and then sit out. So I get that there's times where that has to happen, but I want to see just a more concerted effort towards seeing a consistent scheme and theme of what the Bulls are doing on both sides of the court, especially defensively. I feel like this team is just frequently completely lost defensively, and that is something that I think you change through effort and through discipline and through paying attention and through practice, through building good habits, and that clearly to me did not happen under Hoiberg. And I think ultimately, if I was going to pick one reason why I feel it was fine to hire Hoiberg, it was that. It was the fact that it does not feel to me like all this is working out defensively. Now, maybe the concern about that would be that Jim Boylan may have actually had a big piece of whether the Bulls were able to do that or not based on what he was controlling in practice. I don't really know how they distributed those practice responsibilities, but that would be my thing that I would see that would make me feel good about the direction of the team.
Well said, Doug. I couldn't put it any better. With that, we got to pull the big red bus in. We all both got to get back to work. Can't thank you enough for your time. It's always great to co-pilot this big red bus, and I think we're both in agreement. Things are going to get better. That might depress you in the short run if we do end up screwing up the quote-unquote tank. I just think the team has far too much talent to continue playing like this in embarrassing fashion, embarrassing blowouts. Those days need to end quickly. And I think the team will be far more competitive going forward. I'm pretty positive and still bullish on the future overall. I wish Fred Hoiberg the best. He's a great guy, fantastic person. In the long run, that's what matters most. I just don't want him coaching my Chicago Bulls anymore, and alas, he is not. So all the best to you, brother. Have a good one, and we'll talk again soon.
All right.